So we're in Ruth 8 to 17, chapter 2, 8 to 17 this morning. That's what we're going to look at. And as you can kind of see, I like to have maybe a theme for each of these classes that we're teaching. And this might extend into Wednesday, but I want to talk about grace. I want to talk about graciousness, which I think is really implicit in this text. I think if you've read this text, you know that really stands out. It's almost like in bold relief. The grace of Boaz in particular. And then I'd like for us to talk a little bit about, at least at some point, a little bit about how that should extend to us, how we should extend grace. And we receive grace, we should extend grace. And that's kind of where I want to go with this between now and Wednesday. If we finish that today, that's fine. We'll move on Wednesday. We have a little more in this chapter to do, but that's what we'll do. So, Dana, would you lead us in a word of prayer, please? Okay, our tradition here is to read the text. So I want to read 1 through 17 again, just so we have that in mind. Did anybody want to read? Go ahead, Lisa. Read 1 through 7. We'll split it up.
Can I read the 7 through 17 instead?
Yeah. Sure. I'm going to read 1 through 7. Okay, you got to pick out. You're going to read 8 through 7.
8 through 7.
Okay, and you're going to read 1 through 7. We allow. See, we're easy going here. You can do whatever you want. You can read Ephesians if you want. Okay.
Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz, and Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come upon a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest."
Okay.
Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, do not glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to the young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. I have not charged the young men to touch you." Oh, have I not charged the young men to touch you? "And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell down on her face, bowing to the ground, and said, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done in your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and your mother in your native land and came to a people that you did not know. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said to him, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and drink and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she arose to glean, Boaz instructed her, his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles from her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned until the evening, then she beat out what had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Not sure where you want me to
say. Yeah, we can stop there for now. We'll pick it up. Okay, thank you. Couple of things. Any questions that come to mind as you're reading this? One of the things I put on the lesson sheet, I always think it's kind of good to have your own questions, just not just mine, you know. If you have some questions that you have, anybody have anything that occurs to them as they read this? We'll go through the text here in a minute, but no one? You just got it all figured out. What's glean mean? You hear it in prayers, but, right? Help us glean from this passage that which God would want us to know. Right.
One of my questions was, why did Boaz feel the need to say to her, haven't I told my men not to touch you? Mm-hmm. Is that a cultural thing back then that there was an issue with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. In fact, and we'll cover that because I think it's a real important part of this. So we'll defer that because I think it kind of goes into a little package of things here that he says. But just quickly, yes, that there were a lot of young men there who were not necessarily well behaved all the time. And this was kind of unusual for this foreign, probably pretty young lady to be out there working with them.
What were his young women doing? Were they harvesting or were they also gleaning?
What we understand it, and Ben really is the agricultural expert or something, but as I say, you have the men who are out there sickling. I think you covered this actually somewhat, but they're out there, you know, wielding the sickles of faithful and true. How that song goes? Anyway, they're wielding the sickles, and then the women follow, and they pick up some of the regular. Then you have the poor and the strangers who are behind picking up the leftovers, so to speak. So the women are putting these things into bundles, the way I understand it. That's why they're put. Everybody's working.
But he told her to follow his young women.
Follow his young women, yeah, to stay close to them,
right?
So that they're. Because they're protected, they're protected. So if she follows them, he'd be. In fact, it's interesting in verse 9. Let your eyes be on the field that they, which is a masculine pronoun, reaping, and go after them, which is feminine in the Hebrew. So that does kind of support that idea that you've got that kind of order in this. So, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading some also on this, that when they talk about the reapers versus the young men versus the young women versus the gleaner, those are all different groups of people. And it's kind of like even today when a lot of times when harvesting goes on, the harvester is doing everybody's fields. It's kind of a community thing. And they were saying that even the reapers could be like the community reapers going through. And so the young men were actually Boaz's crew that was in charge of making sure his part of it's being managed properly as the reaper is going through and blasting through and cutting down, you know, because it's a once a year thing. Like I was saying, all hands on deck. So
maybe you know, this group
of reapers that are just swinging all the way through everybody's fields.
You can kind of see this in today because you see now they use machines to harvest an awful lot of fields. You see a machine go through, but then you will see people walking through the fields and picking up and. They have to do some certain things to get the, like hay bales. And I know a little bit about this because I worked with the Farm Bureau for 12 years, so I did see some of it. I did as little as possible, but I say. Lisa, you...
In verse 14, it says at mealtime, Boaz, you know, invited her or said to her, come, you know, eat with us.
Uh-huh.
Well, was she the only woman at that lunch date?
With the men?
I call it a lunch date, so it makes it more like they dated a little bit.
Yeah. That's a good question. It said, so she sat beside the reapers, and that's kind of all it says. And I think those would primarily be the men. But I don't know. I it's kind of hard to believe that there'd just be her sitting there. I think there's a lesson we're going to draw from that, the fact that he's sitting with them. He's sitting with all of his people. And then he invites her to sit there as well. So, I mean, there's some grace there, too. Yes.
The picture I get from that invitation, it sounds like a new person that you're inviting to the lunch table at school. Here's a group of people, and the outsider doesn't feel comfortable to join until someone says, come join us.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it sounds.
Yeah, and that's, again, that kind of comes back to some things we'll get into a little bit more later, because that's a very important part of this, the way he treats her, given her status. And as I've mentioned a thousand times, I mean, I came into a lot of new schools, and I was, and sometimes in the middle of the year, and my nightmare, literal, I had nightmares about this, about holding my tray in the cafeteria and looking around and not knowing where I'm going to sit, you know, and like, because if you don't just go sit next to anybody, right? And so there's nobody, and you just kind of like that feeling. It still haunts me today. When I walk into a restaurant, I kind of look around to see, make sure there's places to sit. You know, it's kind of like, that's not rational today, but it just kind of gets that feeling. And so he's accepting her, and this is a very strong indication of that. Just as with Eric's question about him having, he protects her. You know, he's going all out to protect her from any possible. In fact, the word there that when he says in verse 9, I've charged the women not to touch you, the Hebrew word is to molest you. Molest you. So it's a stronger word than the ESV uses here. Yes?
Back to your question you asked about the gleaning, what is gleaning? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I recall in the law of Moses, that was part of the law of Moses, that they were not supposed to, the field owners were not supposed to harvest the corners of the fields, that was left for the poor, and then the poor would go in and they would glean that, or that would be left over for the poor.
Right.
Also, growing up on a ranch and mowing fields, we'd have alfalfa or we would have corn. There's a lot of things that fall off the truck, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, You make a pass from end to end in the field, say with the swather. There's alfalfa that you just don't get. It's left over. The corners, you come in and you turn. You can't mow a corner of a field with a swather. You have to go in there by hand. That was my job. Yeah. My dad was a swather. And then I would take that back and feed it to the calves. In the law, in Old Testament times, you don't do that. You leave it there. And the poor come in and that's for them.
Yeah, right. And gleaning is just actually picking it up, right? I mean, when you glean, you're receiving some, taking something, and from you had, I passed you by. You had a
You were just talking about, you know, the whole family being involved in the harvest. We spent some time up in Idaho, and they closed the high schools up there so the kids could participate in the potato harvest.
Yeah. There's a lot of the agricultural world is very interesting, and if you ever get involved in it, most of the people that I worked with had almond orchards or cherry orchards or things like that. They had primarily orchards. But then they had, some had dairies, and then they had they'd grow the alfalfa because that'd be the cheaper. If you had the property, it'd be the cheaper way to do it, that rather than buying it from somebody else. Then you had people that just grew alfalfa so they could, you know, provide feed for the cows and what have you. So it's an interesting world. And, you know, if you live in Central California more than up here even, there's some obviously out rice fields and stuff here, but there's just a lot. That's what the whole culture is. It's all agriculture in Central California, pretty much. So it's an interesting thing, and that's just what's going on here. This is agricultural world that they live in. The harvesting season is relatively short. As Ben said, it's all hands on deck, and there's an order to this thing. And it's important for the story, so we understand at least the mechanics of what's going on here. So I just wanted to go through some of these things. Why does Boaz call her my daughter? Or is there any other? The way I worded this, should we read anything into that? Should we read anything into him calling? If I said that to one of you, it'd be kind of weird.
Well, there's a status thing going on between Boaz and between Ruth here. And when it's explained to him who she is, he realizes and knows who Naomi is.
Yeah.
And so he most likely understands that this is somebody that is a familial relationship at this point. And I think that's why he also takes her under his wing, because he understands the relationship there. That's probably why he calls her his daughter.
Yeah, yeah. And it can also be even interpreted young lady, you know, so that particular term. So that idea. What I was kind of getting at is there's some indication or some commentators will talk about the age difference. But I kind of agree with those who say it's probably not much more than maybe 10 years. That would probably be the outside of this. There's no reason to believe it would be much more than that. It's not talking about a grandpa here and then a young lady or anything like that. So what are the steps that Boaz took to protect and, you know, provide some comfort for her? And I got them up there. I got these kind of the words, the things that he says, you know, do not go, keep close, keep your eyes on the field, go after the women. So he does all these things. He's taking all these steps. It's interesting, in fact, when he says in verse 8, now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, which kind of says the same thing. It's kind of redundant. Don't go to this field. He kind of repeats that. Don't go into any other field. In other words, don't leave this one. Stay put. Stay in this field. And then he says, let your eyes be on the field, verse 9, that they are reaping. He could even mention maybe pointing as he's doing this, that they are reaping, and go after them. Maybe go after the women if the pronouns mean what the Hebrew says they mean. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? So that's more for her benefit, I think, coming back to Eric's question. I think that's for her benefit. He's ordered them not to molest her in any way, not to touch her in any way. So that would be for her benefit. He's telling her this. Okay, I've made every provision to protect you. Yes.
I have a question. So, mm-hmm. Do you think maybe the reason why he's saying that is because she's no longer just gleaning from the corners, and so you have to have permission to do that? And he's saying, I've told them to leave you alone, to let you, because now she's gleaning from the whole field.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Now she's closer to the guys than maybe somebody normally would be, especially in someone in her position. So, yeah, good point. Good observation. Yes, Janet?
It also makes me think, the way he phrases it, this, is before he stepped in and gave her this extra protection, she was actually putting herself in a vulnerable position. She was willing to go out and risk her safety in order to provide for Naomi. And it just shows her level of dedication mm-hmm. to her mother-in-law. And so I like that she is doing that. She's trusting that she has hope that everything will work out. And
yeah.
Again, I think there's a lot of vulnerability in this story, and people trusting and people taking care of each other.
Right. No, good. Yeah, that's, I think we talked about that a little bit on Wednesday night anyway, that the fact that there's a lot of courage in just doing this, going out, and not only the idea that she was so dedicated, she was willing to go out and work as hard as she did. Remember, it says at the end of verse 7, she continued until early morning until now, which would be later, except for a short rest. So we talked about her energy. But involved in that was also her willingness to take a risk, her courage in doing this, putting herself out there. And now, but she's putting herself in a vulnerable position. She's a foreigner. Who cares about her? You know, I mean, in her mind, she said, who's going to care about me? Of all these guys around here, you know, what are they going to do? And even the women, what are they going to care about me? I'm a foreigner. I'm a Moabite. So yeah, I think that's all involved in this and important to the understanding of the story of what's going on here. Especially because now we have, what we're reading about now in this section is Boaz is meeting Ruth now. Right? This is the first meeting. And really, we have reason to believe that the words he says, probably the first time that she's really been shown kindness, at least in the text that we have, first time that she's really been shown some kindness by anyone other than Naomi in town. So you kind of get that part of it too. Now she's beginning to feel, and he makes her feel accepted, which is huge. you ever been new in anything, any kind of new, that's huge, you know, to have that sense of belonging that he's giving her. So that's certainly one thing he does. So he's taking care of her. What's the thirsty thing? You know, you're thirsty, go drink. Why is that in the text? Why is that an important point? When he says, if you're thirsty, go drink from the water that the young men have drawn. What does that add to the story?
That she wouldn't have to get it herself.
Wouldn't have to, yeah, and she might have to go all the way back to the house. I mean, sometimes you have to walk a long way, you know, so she's not with everybody. So she'd go back to the house and get it. And he's saying, no, you go to the well. Go to the well that the young men are drawing from. And so that's another benefit that he's giving her in this whole thing.
It's one of those basic human needs, mm-hmm. The food, shelter, and clothing.
Right.
And the shelter that he's providing for her is her safety, told the men not to touch her,
right.
And the food and water, a means to gather food and water. She's going to get thirsty working out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's speaking. Okay.
Well, I mean, Ruth is she's poor, right? It's a class difference, right? She's not a part of the field. She's not a worker.
Right.
So the poor people that were gleaning normally wouldn't have had access to that water. He's telling her, go ahead, you can have access. He's treating her as one of his workers, as one of his own. She normally wouldn't get that privilege, but now he's blessing her with that privilege.
Yeah, absolutely.
And part of the gleaning among the sheaves is another perk, another benefit, because the poor people wouldn't have had that opportunity. They would have picked up the sheaves, and whatever was left over is what they got. He is giving her the benefit to go among the sheaves and get more than what she normally would get as a pilgrim.
Yeah. What are sheaves? Bringing in the sheaves, you know, he's seeing that without us bringing in the cheese.
That's bundles of grain.
Yeah, bundles of grain. So yeah, it's nice to know that she's given that, and Carl said it well. I mean, she's given all these privileges that a person in her situation normally wouldn't get. Going back to the do not touch her. Let's remember we talked about this Wednesday night. Remember, this is the time of the judges. That's mentioned in verse 1. During the time of the judges, they're setting this in this scene. What we know about that time is that there was a lot of bad actors everywhere. I mean, the people were not being obedient to God. The only time they really appealed to God is when they got in trouble for their disobedience. And you had raiders coming in from all over. That's one method God used to judge the people. You had a lot of stuff going on, and that's all happening around them. I mean, it's a world not unlike ours, but probably worse, in the sense that the environment, the moral environment, was not very good. I mean, it was bad. It was a bad moral environment. And so everything, you know, to protect her as someone who's probably the most vulnerable person you could be, right? She's a young, probably pretty Moabite woman who's her only friend, her only person is a widow, an older widow woman. That's her only connection. And now she's coming into this area, foreign land, and going to work with a bunch of guys who are guys, right? I mean, they're just, and so it seems to me that Boaz is covering all the ground here, covering all the steps to keep her protected. I can't think of anything he left out, and he is the. Remember, what does the word mean, Boaz? Do you remember what that means?
Strength.
Man of strength, a man of strength. One of the pillars in the temple was called Boaz. It was kind of interesting. It also could mean a warrior. In fact, he's called that. That word warrior is used in there, so. It's very possible, when given this information, very possible Boaz had to, on occasion, defend his people and his farm from invading warriors, the Bedouins that would come in sometimes and attack. So all those things are possible about them, and we just got to keep that environment. That's why I think it says in verse 1, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine land. In the days when the judges ruled, we want to keep that in mind. That the my peripheral vision is still working.
Yeah, it's apparently. Well, I mean, and whenever I think about the time of Judges, I think of Judges 19, right? That story of the guy who's the Levite who has his wife. She's from Bethlehem, actually, where mm-hmm. this is taking place. And they're traveling up from Bethlehem up to Jerusalem. And it says that the Benjamites were there. And during the night, certain worthless men, so not worthy men, but worthless, is the opposite of how Boaz was described, came and pounded on the door. They wanted to have relations with the Levite, and he sent his wife out to them. And of course, you know, they raped her until she died. And that's the time. I mean, do not molest her, do not touch her. Boaz, and the young men might be those kinds of people. I've told them not to touch you. So they know they're going to have to deal with Boaz.
Yeah.
So that's an eye-opening section. Brian's looking at me with eyes like this right now. But, I mean, that's the time that they're living in, right? The kind of, more than just Bedouin raiders, I mean, really bad stuff.
Yeah, it could be, yeah. The only thing that maybe counters that a little bit in verse 4, remember what it says, Boaz came from Bethlehem and he said to the reapers, the Lord be with you, and they answered, the Lord bless you. So there seems to be, he seems to have created this culture within this other culture in which these men, his work party, if you will, seem to respect God. And so, but still.
So that's why his field's a safe place versus all the other
fields. Yeah, it's kind of a world within a world, the church within the world, almost. You could almost look at it that way. Here's the world, you know, with all its troubles and everything. Here's the church of Boaz, you know, sort of his little assemblage of people who are working the fields and doing the things they're doing. But still, I mean, it's telling that he still says, don't touch her. And maybe that meant don't try to create a relationship with her, even, right? Don't even try to. You know, build that relationship even in a good way. Just leave her alone.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I don't mean to open a big can up, but it's easier to open it when you're standing up there. About before you move on from Boaz, maybe we're going to punt and talk about this on Wednesday. But there seems to be more in the way they're talking to each other, right? I think a lot of times when you read it, it's just like, well, he's being responsible and he sees her as need, so he's helping her needs, but there seems to be more to the story. And you know, like even in the first day when people says, is it a love story, is it not a love story, and it's hard not to start thinking about how Boaz talks to her. And where am I going with this? Like when he says, he doesn't say just, hey, go give her a bundle. He says, throw some out of the bundle. And you can take that two ways. Either it's keeping her dignity, right, saying, hey, I'm not just, you know, she's still, I'm trying to give her dignity because she's a hard worker. Or he's like, I don't want everybody to know that I actually really like her, you know? Yeah. You never know. As Kyle brought up, he may know already that there is a relative, that they're a relative. And the way he talks in chapter 3 in the talking back and forth, you wonder, because he's even commends her for not going after the other young men and all that. Mm-hmm. And maybe it is just all he's just fulfilling his responsibilities, but you already said she's probably was a pretty young woman and there could be something there. So I don't know if you want to address that, but it is interesting, at least in this, that he didn't just say, hey, go take a bundle.
Yeah.
You know, right. Just, you know, we'll pull some out and leave it for her.
One thing I thought about in terms of that was in these days with women, some women, you know, that would be patronizing and they wouldn't like it. You know, hey, don't do that. You know, I can do this myself and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of see that, all this protection and everything. You know, some women get mad at you for opening the door for them.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And they say, you know, they just kind of look at you like, there are those. But that certainly wasn't true in this time. And, yeah, who are these people? They're the crazy people. I don't even get mad if they open the door for me. I don't care. If a woman can open the door for me, I say thank you. You know, that's what I kind of think they ought to do, you know.
I was somewhere the other day. I just have to say this. It's kind of been on my mind. I was at the donut shop. And
it's a good place to be.
Yeah, I know. And my hands were full.
She pointed at me because I saw her.
And my hands were full. And the this is Guy and his two or three sons. And they closed the door. They saw me coming.
And closed.
And just let the door go.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Anyway, that has nothing to do with this. I had to get that out there.
We can make it work. I think we could bring it in.
It's
I mean,
out there, though.
Really, really. I'm not just stretching too much, but I think really this thing is all about being gracious, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just one little work of gracious. Amy?
I was going to say, we've talked a lot about her being a Moabite and that coming up all the time. Mm-hmm. And then he says, you know, here's what you are now, my daughter. Mm-hmm. If you're thirsty, you drink, and extends all these provisions and protection for her.
Right.
And I think what a great transformation of who she is, not a foreigner only.
Right, and I think that's key, and we ask that question: Why does the narrator keep reminding us that she's a Moabitess? And then when his address to her and the way he treats her, he doesn't treat her as a Moabitess. He treats her as his daughter. I mean, that's what he treats at this point, or his friend, or a young lady, a young worthy woman. Chapter 3, verse 11. Kimmy, was that your?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've only been here Wednesday and Sunday.
Been, yeah.
And I'm not going to be here after. But I would like, I don't think there's anything in here that does say that she's pretty. So,
no.
And the reason why I want to say that is because if we're going to give Boaz credit for the person that he is, I'd like to give him credit for saying what he said about how he had heard what she has done for her mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. That's what he finds attractive and appealing,
right.
Not because she may or may have not been pretty.
Right. Yeah. The that's an assumption, and the only reason I think that assumption, and a lot of people make it, is because of what he says over in chapter 3. In verse 10, he says, "You made this last kindness greater than the first. You have not gone after the young men." I think the idea there is that she had options. If she was accepted in the community, she would have options, and usually that would be to somebody who is attractive. Yes, sir.
I think when we start talking about this, it's important to keep in mind the big difference between marriage today and marriage in Bible times.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think of it. The story of a man and a woman find each other, and they fall in love, and they get to marry.
Right.
That love is the center of the relationship. But marriage in these days was usually arranged.
Mm-hmm.
Was not about falling in love at all. It was about property, and it was about children.
Right.
And that's why the Levirate law and all that. Mm-hmm. So, and if they fell in love too, that's wonderful. And I love to read the story from that point of view. But I think the point of this for those people is right. Providing for the inheritance of Naomi, really, through Boaz's grace.
Yeah, and that's ultimately Ben's father was correct. I mean, the reason the story is in here primarily is to get to the genealogy and to establish that where we have David and then the Jesus eventually coming from this whole line. So. I mean, this even goes far beyond all of the property and those kinds of things. I think, though, that it's fair to say that the Bible does speak of beauty and non-beauty once in a while. And so to Leah's, whose eyes were weak, and then, you know, that Rachel was more attractive. And that's one he wanted because she was, and he speaks of Moses as being a beautiful child. And that's why they took him in the river, you know, and stuff like that. So it's just natural. I mean, because in this case, you don't have an arranged marriage as such. I mean, it's going to be a marriage that's based on achieving something that was legal to achieve and good to achieve and all of that. So there are other things in place here, but he had a choice in that too. Just as the nearest redeemer had a choice. He didn't want to do it. He had other interests at heart, and so he didn't want to do that. And so it was... So I think the point's been made, and I think it's a really good one, that what you have here is a man of character who sees someone who has character and is attracted to that. I think that clearly is the first thing. That's what's spelled out in the text, right? That he saw the way she treated her mother-in-law. This is, it says, it's all been reported to me. And so people have been telling him this, and that's all come out, and so that's why, that's the basis of this relationship.
I can see that. I mean, I can see that he's attracted to that. I wouldn't disagree with that. I feel I could also say, though, that he's honoring, because in verse 12, the Lord repay you for what you have done. And Boaz, he's a worthy man, and he's a man that is obviously serving God. And he would be a man that is knowledgeable of the importance of taking care of the poor. And here is someone that is completely destitute and wants to serve God. So by him providing for her, he's honoring God. Mm-hmm. I could look at it just like that, too. I don't know what she looks like.
Yeah, we can totally discount the physical thing if you want. Feel free. I'm just kind of a little dose of reality. That you tend to be. I mean, if she's a, you know, I mean, just. I think I'll stop there. I'll dig myself into a really, really deep hole. What was the can of orange juice? I think I opened.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like we said at the first class, and it makes people uncomfortable. I'll just say it from back here, because everybody wants to flatten the characters out.
And not
give them any depth, and is to ask the question, is there anything else there? And we only know what we've been revealed, but I think it makes an interesting discussion to talk about it. I mean, even in the arranged marriages, that's really deep and it was complex. It wasn't just simple and just arranged. There was a lot more to it. So it is interesting to see there may be some depth to what's going on between the two of them and the way they talk to each other in this scene and in the next scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just
we haven't even talked about what it means to uncover the feet and snug the lip on his feet.
I know, we're not even there yet. We're not even sleeping in the threshing floor thing yet.
And that's kind of where.
And I hope that's when you're teaching, actually. You get the threshing floor part. Oh, Janet, when you.
I was just going to say, any one of us, if we're lovely on the inside, we're lovely on the outside. And any one of us, when we're ugly on the inside, we seem more ugly on the outside. So I really think this is about her inner beauty. And it doesn't... I know that Hollywood likes to make the good guy and the good woman to be beautiful, but really, in real life, it's the inner beauty that comes out.
Yeah,
with that... And the inner ugliness that also comes out.
No,
and
no,
I, and
no
I think that that's what's key.
Yeah, I just think there are little clues in here. I'm just coming back to reality again. Just there are little clues in here that suggest that she probably was attractive in some, because why, you know, he told him not to mess with her. Well, I mean, you know, that I think that's there because probably she was somebody, maybe somebody want to because of the way she looked. I don't know. I mean, we're not worried about her inner beauty. They're not going to molest her because of her inner beauty.
Well, why would two Israelite boys go marry her to begin with?
You should have stopped.
Land? Why would you do that to your family?
Yeah, that too. I didn't stop. Yeah, well, you see, people keep bringing it up.
I'm going to beat this up, so I don't have
to
answer it.
Right. I mean, you know, what it is, guys, were they, those marriages weren't arranged, actually, in that case, to Mahlon and Chilion, because that was over in Moab. Maybe that wasn't. I don't know how they would arrange that. Boy, okay. See, Kimmy, you did this. okay, let's move on back to inner beauty. Let's concentrate on inner beauty and the inner. Person of Boaz. Again, I'll repeat that Boaz was a person of character. That's clear not only from what is said about him, but the way he proceeds, the way he acts here. And he's attracted to someone who has character, right? Has the inner self, the inner person is someone that is attractive to him, regardless of anything else. Regardless of what he looked like, regardless of what she looked like, that's true. That's the key. That's a key part of this story, and so he treats her in such a way that shows the grace of God and his grace, And really, when I get want to get out of this, I'm going to kind of jump down to this because I want us at least to be thinking about this. In verses 10 to 13, now in her reaction to this, because you have Boaz's statements and what he does, and then you have her reaction to this, she falls on her face, bowing to, why have you shown me such favor? What is our, what is the pat answer when we ask, how do we define grace? Unmerited favor, right? And we almost kind of scold you if you give that answer because it's too simple. But in this case, it fits. She doesn't merit any favor. That's where she's coming from. I don't have any. Why would you show grace to me? I've got nothing to offer, and yet he does. And he says, this is where we learn that. Well, it's because I know about how you dealt with Naomi. I know how you've been dealing with her, right? And you've done that since the death of your husband, and how you came to this foreign land and you embraced God. Those things were all appealing to him. Those are things he found appealing to him. Not so he could marry her necessarily. Now, maybe that's in the back of his mind. But right now, it's why he's treating her the way he's treating her, right? That's why he's treating her kindly. She doesn't merit that. She's humble enough to see that, But he's humble too. Remember, he eats with his workers. You know, he sits down, he eats with his guys. He doesn't, you know, eat somewhere up in the house. And then all the time I've seen around, you know, you guys have these big ranches, they eat up in the house, and then all their workers go out and they kind of eat wherever they want. They give them an hour off, and he's sitting there eating. So he's humble as well. And then he says, he brings the Lord's part in this. The Lord repay you. So she got grace because... She was shown grace, so she got grace because it was shown to her, and then she received the Lord's grace. And then how? She received it through the grace of Boaz. Boaz is the one who is showing grace to you. So what I'm trying to get you to see here, maybe it's obvious, but because of the grace of the Lord's grace, which he refers to, is demonstrated through Boaz. It's not like God just kind of... Sometimes we think grace is a force of some kind that just kind of comes upon us, or just a thought. You know, well, yeah, God loves me and he's giving... It's really something that is actual, that is shown and demonstrated through us, through other people. That grace is shown through us. The lesson of this to me, I mean, at least at this point in the book, is we show grace because God has shown us grace.
I think that comment sort of connects the dot between grace and faith, too, because like in verse 12, it talks there about how the God of Israel, under whose wing you have come to take refuge,
mm-hmm.
she's there trusting in God, but she doesn't know what that refuge is going to look like.
Right.
And so that it happens to be Boaz is sort of circumstantial to where she is mm-hmm. and through God's providence, but her faith has allowed her to be trusting that there is this refuge that he's been providing.
Yeah, exactly. So when we say, you take refuge under the wings of God, it sort of reminds me of James chapter 2, where the person comes in and he talks about works and faith, right? He says, it's one thing, you know, you say to this person who needs food and clothing, go, warm, be filled, you know? No, that person just walked into your presence, and if you have God's grace, and if you want that person to be shown God's grace, you clothe him and you fill him. You do it. And sometimes I think we miss that point. We take God's grace as if it's some kind of benefit to us, that some kind of force that's working in our life. But it's not working in our life if we don't demonstrate it, if we don't turn around and show it. Then we can't say that God's grace is doing for us what God intended. Because clearly here, the under wings of the Lord is under the wings of Boaz, right? So we'll talk more about that on Wednesday.